everyone. I'm Susie Sevier.
And I'm Michael Barnhart. Welcome to the Adventures of a Real Estate Investor podcast, where we interview industry experts and chat with them about their passions and how they are leveraging real estate investing to create an impact in their world. What impact do you want to make?
Did you know there are almost 8 billion people on this planet? What if each of us started with ourselves, with our family, in our community? All we have to do is start with a manageable 1% action every day. The effect of those billions of 1% gestures would be astronomical. This is your place to reflect and believe. Join us every week to start cultivating those ideas on the impact that you want to make in your world.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of The Adventures of a Real Estate Investor. I'm Susie.
And I'm Michael, and we're excited you joined us for this adventure.
So today's very special guest is Ingrid Duking. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi Susie, hi Michael. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we are super, super excited. And the greatest part about Ingrid and I's relationship is that we met through GoBundance. And I am just really, really happy that Ingrid and I were like in a pod together. So we were meeting weekly. Now we meet bi-weekly, but it was me, Ingrid, and Kim. And the fun fact about all of that too is that Ingrid and Kim both live in Georgia, Michael being from Georgia. So now when Michael and I go to Georgia, I get to see Ingrid and Kim at the same time. Woo. And that really, really, really makes me happy. But it's cool because all of us like really love real estate and really actually love like travel and adventure and are very like high, successful, like high performing women. And so it was really great just to be in a group with you two. And I'm really glad that you're here with us today.
Oh, thank you, Susie. I'm actually very, very excited.
Yay.
Awesome, Ingrid. Well, obviously, Susie knows a lot about you. And I've heard a lot about you, but people who don't know about you are our listeners. Would you mind sharing with our adventurous family a little bit more about your background and like why you started investing in real estate?
Yeah, of course. So originally, I'm from Colombia, South America. I was born and raised there, and I came with my family when I was 10, 11 years old to the United States, the big, beautiful city of Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And that's where pretty much I went to school. So by trade, I am an engineer. I'm into the mechanical nuclear field. And it all happened right after college. That's when I realized that real estate is where you need to start investing. What happened was that we've been pretty much kind of like coded by society that you go to school, you graduate college, and then your route to success is going to be get a corporate job. You know, get a good corporate job, get make sure that you have good benefits, a 401k, pension. So, you know, me, I was being a good girl. And so I did that. Right after college, I worked for a good engineering company or so I thought in the sense of like in 2014, out of nowhere, we had a morning meeting at my job and they told us that they were going to have a reduction in staff. And that day, within hours, like my department got reduced by 70%. Wow. So everybody just went like within like hours, like in 2 hours, everybody just went away. I got back home and I was talking to my husband. I'm like, hey, this doesn't seem right. Like I thought I was being loyal to the company. Those employees were being loyal to the company. But something that is important is do not confuse being useful for a company with being indispensable. Like they can replace you pretty much, even if you spend 10 years of your life loyally working for a company. So that's when we realized, hey, what can we invest on? And me being from Colombia, our culture is mainly based of like, if you own real estate, that's how you know you've made it or like your route to success. Oh. So I decided to be like, okay, we need to buy real estate. And I knew nothing. Like, seriously, nothing about real estate. I have no idea what Bigger Pockets was. I had no idea about meetups, nothing like that. We just realized we need to buy real estate. And we started investing in Georgia, 20 minutes north of Atlanta, so the city of Marietta. Mm-hmm. We were living in Pennsylvania, and we bought a property sight unseen in Atlanta, Georgia, because I just needed to buy something. Everything was going and selling so fast. It was 2014. So I was like, we need to just get into this game. We're going to go buy a property. So I came up with like a list of criteria, like a guideline of like, okay, we're going to go into the city. It has to be so many miles from a major interstate because Atlanta traffic sucks pretty much. So it has to be 3 miles from an interstate and it has to be close to like Walmart and grocery stores. and school district has to be good. So those were like our criteria, and a house popped up on the market and we put an offer within like 2 hours. Like I was like addicted. I was like on Zillow and on Redfin, making sure getting all the notifications. So we bought this property and it was a learning curve, to be honest, because we flew from Pennsylvania. We were cleaning, painting, doing all this work. And this one person comes and he's like, "Hey, are you guys going to rent this property?" And I'm like, "Yeah, of course." And then he's like, "Well, rent it to me. I'll give you 3 months rent." And I'm like, "Oh, of course. Yes." Red flag, of course. Now,
right? We get so excited for stuff like that, though.
Yes, it was like 3 months. Of course. There you go. Well, he became our first eviction because after 3 months, he didn't have any more money to pay for rent. So again, learning curve. But after that, I started to educate myself more, bigger pockets, talk to fellow investors. I came up with a criteria for vetting tenants and everything. And what happened was that he got evicted and then a new family moved in, and that family has been with us for 8 years,
actually. Wow.
And they renewed the contract for an additional year this year. So it's been awesome. That was pretty much our first experience, or my first experience with real estate.
It's cool.
That is cool. So yeah. Most people, you know, they think to themselves like, "Oh my gosh, like within the first 3 months, I've already had bad luck. Like I'm not going to do it anymore." So like What in your mind were you like, "Okay, no, like I need to try it again"?
So that's what happened. Like those 3 months, and when he stopped paying rent, like the first tenant, I told my husband, like, "This is horrible. I don't know why they say investing in real estate makes money." But then, of course, once you start seeing the cash flow and the family that moved in, we did a pretty good job of vetting the new family, the new tenants. And once you do a really good job of doing that, then the chances of you getting a better quality tenant increase. So we haven't had any issues with them. They pay rent on time. And that's why I told my husband, this could work. Because real estate was plan B for us. We were still engineers, loved the career, the corporate job. And that became like plan B. Something happens, we have one house, right? But as we evolved, I realized the potential and the freedom that real estate can buy for you. And we started investing more. Yeah.
That's cool. So what does your portfolio look like now? Is it just long-term rentals like that? Or have you diversified a little bit? Or
yes. And something that I like to do, I like to pivot. Like with my strategies, I like to slightly pivot in order to keep course, or depending on my goals. Right now, I have over 55 units, and it's a mix of long-term rentals. Those are the boring ones. You can think of those. They're like, "Oh, long-term rentals."
They're all exciting.
Different levels of excitement.
Yes. There, I like that.
Yes. So the least level of excitement, long-term rentals, they build appreciation, which I love. All of them do. But then we have midterm rentals. And that's one of the strategies we used to pivot during COVID, is that we saw a demand for traveling professionals, specifically traveling nurses. So we started with doing more midterm rentals and buying properties close to hospitals. So we bought a few properties within 1 to 2 miles of hospitals. And it's been honestly a great strategy for us. And we also have short-term rentals as well.
Nice. Which one's your favorite?
My favorite one, the midterm rental. I feel like it's like a mix of both.
Yeah.
Like you get the excitement of going there and furnishing the property, but then you don't have to go all wild, like a Airbnb or short-term rental. You need to make sure that you get super creative and stuff like that, because people are there for experiences. With a midterm rental, it's different. Like, you got to make sure that it looks nice in the inside, but you don't have to go like wild and make sure there's a theme or nothing like that. And then you have the benefit of higher rents, so higher cash flow. But again, it's 30 days minimum. So you don't get the turnover, the daily or every 2 days turnover of a short-term rental.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what I was going to say too. Like just thinking about it that way, like as more and more people, I mean, I've seen people on Twitter and Instagram, something like that, I wouldn't say hating, but like kind of like hating on Airbnb and VRBOs, because like, it's just like, okay, cool. Everybody's doing it now. They're just renting out a room in their house, right? Like, and it's like not an experience anymore. Like Airbnb became Airbnb because they sold experiences, right? So like now you have to make sure that you're, you know, going above and beyond to make sure that the person who's come to stay with you is like having like this incredible experience, right? That's the challenge with short-term rentals. That's at least where I see it going. But with medium-term rentals, like, yeah, you just have to provide a nice living space for somebody, because they're going to stay there for a while, right? It doesn't have to be this mind-blowing experience for them.
Exactly.
Especially as more and more millennials are starting to, you know, rent short-term rentals and stuff like that.
Well, even like when people can work from home, right? Like that's even a great advantage, is medium-term rentals because mm-hmm. you can try out new places where you could potentially want to move. Or if you're, mm-hmm. he's just like, hey, you can like technically live wherever. Like that's a great advantage as well.
Yeah. And a question for you about medium-term rentals. Like I'm assuming they probably don't have the same scrutiny as like short-term rentals, right? Like, mm-hmm. they don't fall under the same as like hotels and stuff like that. Is that correct? Am I correct?
Yeah. So for instance, in depending on the county or the city, and make sure that if you're doing like a short-term rental, make sure that you check the regulations of your city and county. But in Atlanta, for instance, there's one that talks about if someone is staying for less than 30 days, then it becomes a short-term rental. Mm. And midterm rentals, I have the requirement of minimum 30 days and longer. Okay. So therefore, it doesn't apply as a short-term rental. And I'm not violating any laws or nothing like that. But yes, it all depends on the zoning. Some of them is like less than 7 days. Some of them is less than 30 days. So you have to just double check with your regulations.
Okay. So after 30 days in that specific incident that you're talking about, after 30 days, it's the same consideration as like a long-term rental then?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Cool. I had another question. Like since you buy around hospitals and stuff like that, like are you able to like form partnerships or strategic partnerships with the hospitals in order to like advertise to specific nurses coming in, or how do you advertise to get those nurses there?
So there's actually this one major website that I use, but I've also been in contact with companies that like contracting companies that have mm-hmm. traveling nurses. So one of the websites that I mainly use is Furnish Finder, which is like a very high website that caters towards traveling nurses. But it's also, there's contracting companies that I've seen that they send contracts to like a specific hospital. I get in touch with them. So what happens is they contact me. It's like, hey, we're going to have a nurse coming to your area and we're going to send him their link and see if she likes the apartment. So that's like another revenue that I have. So I have that firsthand connection with the contracting company. And then I have the website, which is open to anyone pretty much.
That's cool.
That is cool.
And I know the answer to this question. I'm excited to share it with listeners as mm-hmm. well. Like, I know that you scaled and then your whole point was to scale enough where you could leave your W-2 job, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
How was that whole process? And like what goals did you set in order to achieve it?
For leaving my W-2 job?
Yeah.
Yes. I left my W-2 job 4 months, like, no, 5 months ago already. Oh my gosh. I left. Thank you. April 21st. That's when I left. So my main goal was to make sure that my cash flow actually gave me replace my monthly salary as an engineer. And I was in management for a nuclear company here in Augusta, Georgia. My main goal was make sure that my cash flow replaced my W-2 income. And the way I did that, and this is what I recommend listeners do, instead of thinking how many units I need, think what cash flow do I need and how can I get to this cash flow? And definitely you can get there through long-term rentals. You can get there solely with Airbnbs and short-term rentals or mid-term rentals. Now I like to diversify my portfolio. So I like to think of like, I have the security of the long-term rentals. They're there 12 months paying rent monthly, but then I have the high cash flow of the mid-term rentals, which is 30 days, but then I also have some short-term rentals. So I tried to diversify my portfolio. So it took me about 12 units, about 12 to 15 units. That's when I made enough cash flow. Now that I've been doing and I've been growing, that's like additional cash flow that supplements our income pretty much.
That's awesome.
So something that I think is really exciting about this story though, is that like your employer asked you to come back like more than one time. And I think this is kind of big to talk about because so many people, like that feeling of being almost like wanted, you know, mm-hmm. clouds the fact that like what you said at the beginning, that like we are all kind of just like a number and we can be replaced. So like, what did you like say to yourself at like to be like, okay, no, I'm not going back, even though they've asked me now one and two and I think three times.
Yes. And actually, I got a text message like a month ago, too.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. So what happened I would suggest that if anyone runs into that issue is think of why you're doing this. Like, why do I want real estate? Why am I investing in real estate? In my company, and it was a good company. I'm not going to say anything bad about it. It was a really good company. I loved the vision that it had, but I wanted my freedom. I wanted my time. I wanted to spend more time with my family. And I found myself just working like 50, 60, 70 hours. Sometimes it was nights, sometimes it was weekends. And honestly, yes, they can come back to you and be like, hey, you know, don't leave. I'm going to give you 20% more or 30% more. And yes, the money is very tempting. I mean, of course, but what is the end goal? Am I here to still work 60, 70 hours for an additional 20,000? Or can I grow my business and have control of my time? And I think that's what's key is, in my opinion, real wealth comes when you have control of what you can do with your time. It doesn't mean higher salary and then I have no time to spend on things that I want to do or take care of my health or my family or my friends. So in my personal opinion, wealth to me means having control of my time. And I didn't when I was working a corporate job. Now I do. Now I'm able to grow my business. Pretty much like my business rate of growth is dependent on me and how much effort I put into this.
It's incredible.
It is. No, and I even love how you just explained that about like real wealth, right? Because that's huge, because so often than not too, people just think as wealth as a bad thing. Like when you explain it to having control of your time, like you've totally created a whole new narrative and definition around that, which is, that was actually really beautiful. I was like, I want to write that down.
I'm going to copyright that.
Yeah, right. There needs to be, I don't even know, a sticker I put on my computer.
Good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with everything going on right now in the economy, Ingrid, like how, you know, we've seen this growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, since she started investing in 2014, like it's just been a steady growth market. Now, you know, we're in a bear market in Wall Street. Like, how do you see this affecting Main Street? And how is it affecting your investment thesis or strategy?
Oh, I like that question, actually. Because in my personal opinion, again, I don't think we're going to see 2008 prices, to be honest. But like, what I am seeing right now, and I imagine you guys have seen it as well, and as well as the listeners, is I'm seeing a cool down on the market. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing properties staying longer on the market. With interest rates going up, then it hasn't caught up to sellers just yet, but I'm seeing them dropping prices. And to be honest, I feel like the interest rates going up is going to filter down the competition. Now it's going to become harder, more expensive to borrow money. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, if you have cash sitting or if you're liquid to some extent, great opportunities are coming, in my opinion. So that's what I've been doing. I have been utilizing lines of credit. I know that I've been telling Kim and Susie, I'm like, oh, Kim, we just do this. I have portfolio, I have equity, for instance, that it was just there. When I was working my job, I just didn't have the time to even think about how can I utilize this equity. I was so busy with my job. But now, since I have more free time, I've been getting with banks and I've been getting lines of credits on just the equity right now. So I'm using those lines of credit. They're sitting there. I'm making investments. But if the opportunity comes, I'm liquid enough that I can utilize the line of credit.
I love that.
I do too.
That's good.
And I like it because you opened up a whole new strategy, because a lot of people just think about like holding their money, but you're also like, hey, I'm holding my money in addition to using my equity, right? Sometimes people like just focus solely on one, that like that's all that they think about in their mind. So it's nice that you explained like, hey, I'm doing both to take advantage of whatever comes, because you can still work what's happening now and then still be prepared for what's going to happen whenever, a couple months,
exactly,
6 months, a year.
Yes. And honestly, that's one of the reasons why I prefer the line of credit strategy versus the refinancing strategy. Because initially I was going to refinance some of my properties to take the equity out. But then it got me thinking, well, what if I don't have any deal? If I don't find any deals in the next 2-3 months, I'm going to start paying interest on all of that, principal plus interest. And then I started researching into the line of credit. When it's a commercial line of credit, there are banks, not every bank, but I've gotten fixed rate line of credits, a 6%.
Wow.
And I only do monthly only payments on those lines of credit. When I use them, after I pay the money, I'm able to reuse that line of credit. So that's exactly what I'm doing now. Now I'm buying real estate. I'm lending some of the money as a private lender for some of the deals and for my investors. So I'm using that money to open like a whole new doors of opportunities. I'm doing passive investing as well in private equity funds. So funds that give me a 25% return, I'm able to pay the 6% of the interest rate on this line of credit. And then I have like 19% additional just of profits pretty much.
Yeah.
And I'm just utilizing that. I'm paying it off. I'm making more opportunities, taking action. And if something pops up like a multifamily, I'm ready right there with the money to purchase that as well.
That's awesome. And do you see your strategy as far as like long-term, mid-term, or short-term stuff? You're going to be focusing on one or the other, or just still kind of whatever opportunity pops up, you'll be ready or what?
I'm actually looking to do more mid-term rentals.
Yeah.
And I've actually, when I talk to people about that. I keep, you know, some people are like very hesitant because of, hey, COVID, you know, we've handled COVID. Maybe traveling nurses, you know, they're going to decrease. And the really nice thing about midterm rentals is that you don't only cater towards nurses. You cater to new professionals that are moving to a new city. You cater to those individuals that are transitioning. Maybe they sold a house and are looking to downsize, and they need to stay in a place for 3 months until they buy their new property. I've had guests that are not even healthcare professionals. They moved into Atlanta, brand new. They don't know the city. They need a place to stay for 10 months. They get to know the neighborhoods, the areas before they go and purchase a property. I do think that demand is going to still be there, especially in cities that are growing like Atlanta. We have like new companies, new headquarters. Nike is going to establish a center there. We have Amazon, we have Microsoft. So all those big companies are going to attract talent that are going to need a place to stay for a few months, pretty much. So midterm rentals for me, it's a no-brainer.
How did you come up with the like private lending and like those other ideas when it came to pulling your line of equity? I'm curious about that because like in my brain, I initially was like, oh, I've never thought of that before. So like, well, how did you get turned on to it? Because I'm sure a lot of other people are like, there are so many things I don't know about. Like, how do you find out about them?
Okay, so definitely, I wanted to start investing more passively. Now, people talk about real estate, you know, real estate is passive. I call it passive aggressive. It is passive until the water heaters of like 10 properties suddenly break, and then it's not passive anymore. No, I do self-manage some of my properties. So I wanted to do something more passive completely. And that's where I got into in connection through networking with investors. That's what they're doing. They're doing private equity funding, and they're as a group, we invest in syndications. So in that sense, like since we are pooling more money, like $3 million or $4 million, then we're able to negotiate some of the terms with the operators. So that, and it's completely passive in the sense of like you put the money and it goes into the syndication or this investment opportunity, then you start getting the distributions, whatever you negotiate with them. So I started saying, well, I'm going to be active here, but what can I do with my money? I want to make sure that my money is also working for me that is outside of this venue. And that's how like I started talking and networking. And it's all about meaningful networking, in my opinion, is get in touch with people, ask what they're doing and tell them what you're doing. Tell them your goals, ask about their goals and see how you guys can work together.
I love that.
That's great.
Yes, because like so often too, like when we're starting out in real estate, like sometimes our spouse isn't on board. Sometimes our friends are like, I have no idea what you just said to me. Or our parents are like, oh, mm-hmm. Why'd you quit your job? You know, like they just don't get it. And So like a huge part of the community is to go out and just to ask questions and to meet other people. Cause one, you'll become like way more confident in doing it. And two, you'll find these opportunities like Ingrid's talking about, like, because other people are going to want to talk about what they're doing as well. And we're not talking about it to like boost about like, oh my gosh, these are all the great things I'm doing. It's all like a learning process. Like, hey, this really helped me. And let's see if I can help you, or let's see if I can help like your mom or your cat or whoever, you know, that are at all. Like the possibilities are endless. And so It is really cool. Like when you are starting to think about it, like you can get on Bigger Pocket forums, you can find online meetups, mm-hmm. and you can definitely find in-person meetups so that like, depending on where you are, like just in confidence with yourself and like going out into the world and like walking up to somebody you don't know and being like, hey, I'm brand new at this. I don't know what I'm doing. Like all those levels vary so that you can like dip your toes in as you please.
Yeah. And when I first started, actually, I was very shy. I'm like, why would I tell people what I'm doing? You know, that's my own business. They don't need to do this. But don't see it like that. See it as, how can I provide this individual? How can I add value to this individual? How can we work together? You know, how can I give him an opportunity? How can he give me an opportunity? So now, like when I go into the room and we're networking, be vocal about what you're doing. Hey, I'm flipping houses and I'm doing it on this zip code and you have money. Let's do a partnership together. Let's look into see if we can work together. So the more vocal you are, the more people are going to be like, wait, I heard Susie talk about that. She's really interested in doing this. And suddenly I have this deal. I'm going to talk to her, see if she's interested. So that's why it worked out pretty much with this investment group. I was telling people, you know, I want to do passive investing. I'm liquid. I have capital. If you guys want to do it, let's do it. And then suddenly I get a text message saying, hey, Ingrid, I heard that you were interested in doing this. Are you liquid? And I'm like, yes, I'm liquid. Okay, great. And then I started being added. We had a deal and I reviewed the deal. I did my own due diligence. Make sure you do your own due diligence on any deal, of course, like trust but verify. I did it. It worked out and I put the money in. They saw that I put in the money and then suddenly I started gaining more opportunities. Like on a weekly basis, we have like a new WhatsApp group, you know, oil and gas. Here you go. Coffee. Here it is. Land development, self-storage units, ATMs. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need more equity, more lines of credit so I can invest more.
Yeah, but totally. Yeah. And I love ATMs. So yeah. Everyone should invest in ATMs. Actually, no, not everyone. That's not something I am broadcasting to the world, but I really like those.
Your own due diligence. Your own due diligence.
Thank you, Brady. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Ingrid. Before we move into the questions we have at the end, I want to briefly mention something because I want to know more about it from you. I heard you're ultra marathon runner. What does that entail?
Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay. Yes. So I like to think of myself as a jogger. I jog for like 10 hours, pretty much. Yes. So like an ultra marathon is anything that is longer than a marathon, pretty much. And usually it's on trails. And I love trail running just because of the landscape and everything. And the way I see it is, it's a good way for me to challenge myself, pretty much. It's like me against me. And that's what I like about those races is that you are sometimes, since they're so long, we're talking about 50 kilometers. So about 32 miles, 36 miles, some of them are 50 miles. So you have so much time just to be with yourself. And that's, in my opinion, a long race like that. People, when I tell people about that, they're like, oh my gosh, it must be horrible. How can you run like that? And to be honest, it is about training. Don't get me wrong. You do need to train, but it's also a big percentage is how you think. Like the mind is powerful. Like if your mind is like, I'm not going to finish this. You're not going to finish the race because there's so many challenges. Since it's such a long race, so many things can go wrong. But if you have the mentality of adapting to a challenge or an obstacle, it's a blast. Honestly, I have so much fun. I love it. I like seeing how I can adapt to the challenges that the race presents. If it's raining, it's going to be different. If suddenly I eat something to fuel myself and it doesn't sit well with me, then how can I adapt? How can I finish this race? So it's more of a challenge for my mind and my body. So I love it. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So when you were hiking, were you actually hiking or were you like trail running?
Which hike?
The one that you just went on. Like you just came back from it. You were there for a month. I don't remember.
Costa Rica.
Yes. Thank you.
No, that was a hike.
Okay.
That was a hike. Yes.
I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. No, the other ones, I got to show you pictures. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. One of my bucket list items is to run the Leadville 100. So that's.
Ooh.
Once we get back to Colorado.
That's fine. Yeah. Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe because you can have, you can have a partner to paces you. Maybe I'll,
I can pace you.
For the last 50 miles, you can have a pacer. So maybe I'll.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
Are you going to do the Bedwater one? The one in the desert?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Oh, that one looks intense.
I'll ride a scooter.
No, it's actually funny because I'm used to moving when I do my races. Like when I go through the aid stations, it's like, you got to be quick. So I'm walking fast and I'm eating and walking fast through the aid station. And my mom in one of those races, she was waiting for me. And I'm walking, I'm just walking and she's jogging. And I'm like, mom, I'm just walking.
She's like, no, you're not.
Walking fast.
That's awesome.
Thanks for that.
Awesome. So I'll be in touch about that. But for sure,
definitely.
We'll move out to Colorado. But we're getting towards the end of the show, which brings us to the Adventurous Four. These are four exploratory questions about all of our guests. So if you're ready, we'll start.
I'm ready.
Right. So question number one, Ingrid, is where is one place you wish to travel to and why?
That I want to travel?
Yeah.
I would say Patagonia. Mm. Yes. That's a place that I've always wanted to go. And we were going to go, but then COVID hit. So we had to cancel all of our plans, cancel flights and everything. And I think it's just beautiful. I want to do the Torres del Paine hike, which is like a nine day hike. And just looking at the landscape, I just like being surrounded by nature like that. So it's on my bucket list, pretty much.
I love that.
Yes, me too. Cool. So then second question is, what is one thing on your bucket list and how are you leveraging real estate investing to achieve it?
Oh my gosh. And I just did this. So I had the, for the longest time in my bucket list was I want to make sure I want to go backpacking. Like, you know, after college or after high school, I didn't have the money. And then after college, you know, no money, but you have to work and you only get like 2 weeks vacation in a corporate job, right? That's not enough for me to just go backpacking because I also want to go see family during the holidays or weddings and stuff like that. So about a month ago, actually, August 9th, I flew one-way ticket to Costa Rica. And I told Susie this and I told Kim this. And I was in Costa Rica with a one-way ticket. I booked two nights in San Jose. And then everything else came organically. I went hitchhiking. I went to waterfalls. I went to Panama. I went to the Pacific Ocean, the Atlantic Ocean. I went to volcanoes. It was amazing. And that's something that I've always wanted to do, just have that freedom just to go anywhere because I want to go. And because of the systems that I had in place, I didn't even have to like worry about my business in that sense. Like there was one maintenance request that came through the software. I sent a technician, they took care of that and that's it. And something that allowed me to do that is I was able to finance this whole 5-week trip with the cash flow of one of my short-term rentals.
It's so cool.
So I was able to finally do that. Yeah. And it was amazing.
That's awesome.
Which also shows like lifestyle creep, right? Like you don't allow that to happen so that when you want to go on trips for 5 weeks, you can be like, okay, the cash flow isn't actually being used for something like I've already bought. It can be used for all these things in the future. Mm-hmm. So that's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So the third question we have for you, Ingrid, is what is one piece of advice for someone who wants to start passively investing in real estate? Or passively aggressively investing.
Passively aggressively. Okay, so I would say a good piece of advice is, this is going to sound like cliche maybe, but like spend the money or don't, okay, see this as an investment. Spend the money or do the investment of attending a mastermind or hiring a coach. Now, and the reason for that is when I first started, I was very hesitant about spending any money. You know, I didn't have the money. I didn't have, you know, what the money to invest on a coach because I thought I could do it. I'm like, you know, why wouldn't I pay someone if I can figure this out myself? Mm-hmm. But what I didn't realize is those coaches or those mentors, they've gone through that. They failed multiple times. They can help you get to your goal or analyze your goal or what you need to do to accomplish your goal faster than you can. So instead of struggling and spending 3-6 months just failing and trying to figure it out, save the money, make the investment to talk to a coach or a mentor for like an hour, ask questions and be very intentional with your questions. They can save you money. They can save you time. They can help you avoid mistakes. So start investing in yourself early, I would say.
I love that.
I do too. Thank you. So then our fourth and final question is, if you had unlimited resources available to you, how would you leave an impact?
How would I leave an impact? I was actually talking, I had a networking event last night and I was talking to a fellow investor and we're talking about it came organically to doing financial literacy for minorities. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, it was really hard. It wasn't passed down pretty much in school, especially minorities, you know, at least in the Latino community, like the average household wealth in a Latino family is $38,000.
Wow.
That's how much wealth Latinos have. And it's just that it doesn't occur to us that we can become wealthy. Like we don't think there are opportunities out there for us to be wealthy. You know, like we talk about the stock market, like 401k, all that seems to be so out of reach for us. And that's why it was for me. Like I thought, no, I cannot invest in the stock market. I'm not rich enough. That was my way of thinking, even in college, because I never had that education of like, no, you can do this, you can do that. So we were talking about possibly doing like a nonprofit, focusing on minorities and giving and doing financial education.
No, that's awesome. And it's huge because even when one person who like looks like you or sounds like you says that you can do it or that they did it, like you give so many more people inspiration.
And that's actually what we're talking about. Cause like when I was growing up in high school and college, it like, even like in middle school, I didn't know anyone that, I mean, you've heard of successful people, but I didn't see anyone that looked like me. Mm-hmm. It was just a different race and ethnicity. And if I had seen someone, you know, come to my middle school when I was 11 or 12 and they came to me like, hey, I look like you, I'm Latina, I was in your position and it can be done. And this is how you can do it, pretty much. I think it would have had a better impact on, you know, minorities. I agree.
Absolutely. So before we end the show, Ingrid, would you mind sharing with our adventurous family how they can get a hold of you or reach out to you?
Yeah, of course. So I do have my personal website. It's www.ingridduque. So IngridDuque.com. And I'm also active on Instagram. It's going to be engineer.on.fire.
Nice. Which is great. So please, please, please follow her and please reach out if you do have any questions, because she would be happy to help you. I promise that.
Yes.
But Ingrid, thank you again for joining us today. It is always a pleasure. And I can't wait to see you in person.
December, right? We're meeting up in Atlanta. Yes.
And it's going to be great.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
No, nice.
I'm not coming.
Not for you. You're not coming to New Zealand either, Michael.
Yeah.
You guys just have fun without me.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. It's a pleasure. It was a pleasure and a great discussion. So thank you so much. Until next time, explore more, adventure awaits.
Thank you so much for listening. Before you start your next adventure of the day, please take a moment to reflect on the impact that you want to make. All of our efforts combined are what make the monumental impacts. We can't do it without you.
Also, if you enjoyed the episode, please head over to iTunes and leave us an honest review with one of the great insights you received from the show today. And if you believe a friend, family member, or colleague would find great value in listening, please share our podcast with them. As always, your support means the world to us.
Until next time, explore more. Adventure awaits. Woo!